This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues with the top business stories of the day. Julian Ng, I was going to say Kusu Chuang, but it's actually Tan Chung Han. And
a
my
version
son.
Of Kusu Chuang.
Yeah, I like to think I look better than him. We are distinguishable.
But, you know, with radio, there is no proof. So you can continue with your assertions. Okay. After the 8 a.m. bulletin, Melissa Idris joins us with her grill of Nora Manaf, a Group Chief Human Capital Officer at the Maybank Group. So that's going to happen after the 8 a.m. news. Now, coming back to our shores and the kind of stories that are perhaps moving markets, the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research has come out to say that they peg the ringgit's fair value at 4.2 ringgit versus the US dollar.
Yeah, you know, 4.2 versus what we're seeing right now, 4.4. So the question now is this the new normal for the ringgit? I mean, not too long ago, you know, we were enjoying 3.2 against the US dollar, you know, for quite a few years until that steep decline. Although, to be fair, you know, we have seen the decline across various emerging market currencies against the greenback as well. So now going back to that 4.2 figure, the rationale that the MIER gives is that's based on the strength of the economy, and also for the demand for the ringgit. I hear my office manager yelling at me now. It's demand, not demand. Demand for ringgit, you know, and basically due to the rebound in the overall global demand. Demand. Sorry.
I think there is probably a tactical play in the ringgit right now because, as they say, you know, what goes up must come down and vice versa. There is some kind of an upward bias in ringgit targeting right now, and not only ringgit targeting, but also the GDP forecast. 2016 was, you know, a horrible year, and then 2017 would be a rebound from that. But, you know, 420 is this cold comfort because how much of it is imported inflation? How much inflation is importing being imported right now? And we have petrol prices going up, possibly coming emanating from the ringgit US dollar play as well, right? We have crude oil prices going up, and crude oil is quoted in US dollar as well.
Right. So now we've got Dr. Zakaria Abdul Rashid, who is the executive director of the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, essentially talking about, you know, why, or the rationale behind that 420 call.
Ringgit has stabilized, I would say that, has at lower level. There is no immediate indication that the ringgit is going to improve. This non-economic factors is influenced by sentiment and the confidence about the economy. So when I say the economy is strong, resilient, stable, but market players think otherwise about the politics of this country, about the debts of this country, about the general election going to come. These are factors also, I think, influence ringgit exchange rate.
Once again, Dr. Zakaria Abdul Rashid there commenting about the ringgit, you know, with MIER having that call of 4.2 being fair value against the dollar.
So what is interesting is that when he lists out all the kind of problems that are bearing down, you know, pushing sentiment into the negative zone, he's talking about things that perhaps we could resolve. I mean, like our politics, like our debt situation, we just get more fiscal discipline going, and even the general elections, right? I mean, all these things are within the realm of some sort of control.
Yeah, I think that is an all-encompassing call because there are other very much longer-term structural issues. Like he also cited over-reliance on foreign labor, high household debt, high operating expenditure in the federal government, and the economy not moving into a higher value chain. Of course, you can trace this back. You know, all roads lead back to Rome, which is the government. How well
Putrajaya,
how well is the government doing in tackling this? And added on top of our woes, apart from high inflation, I hear that the Bloomberg forecast of economists are targeting about 5%. That's going to be released later today?
Yeah, so at noon today, look out for last month's inflation figures. The median estimate in the Bloomberg survey, 5.3%. That will be the highest since the inflation figures that we saw during the 2008-2009 global financial crisis. You know, back in the middle of 2008 or so, we were seeing 8.5% on year, you know, rises in inflation. So we'll have to wait and see what the official figure is. But if you, you know, dive deeper, you've got the likes of say, I believe it's RBS, who's on one end of the spectrum. Wells, the range is basically anything from 5.8 down to 4.7%. So again, we'll have to wait and see what the official figures are. But going back to the idea of, these factors that influence the sentiment over Malaysia, right? In fact, and one of the things that MIER mentioned was the political stability. That is actually one of the issues I'll be discussing with Fitch when we speak to them at about 9:10, 9:15 or so this morning. We'll be asking, how do these factors, sentiment, for example, weigh on Malaysia's sovereign credit rating?
This is a fairly serious indictment of government, isn't it? I mean, MIER is a well-known, I think would say establishment type think tank to come out and to issue such a strong statement about the kind of failures of politics in this country and how it's really rebounded on our currency is actually quite staggering, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's always a case of semantics, isn't it? Some people call it failure, but other people would say, oh, we can't predict this kind of issues and there would be economic challenges along the way. And in fact, one of those challenges that MIER finds also very alarming is the serious issue of youth unemployment, which is around 10 to 11% currently compared to our 3.something% for the whole of Malaysia. 3.something% reflects something that is a lot more sanguine and positive because it's almost full employment. But if you dig down deeper, the youth, our future generation, is unemployed to the extent of 10%. And that's quite alarming, not only to MIR, but to the rest of us as well.
Yeah, no, but once again, if you look at just the unemployment rate in Malaysia as a whole, it's a pretty tight labor market, 3.5%. Just yesterday, the Department of Statistics released their latest figures. That's for February. And pretty much seeing a steady pattern there. There have been media reports that they expect unemployment to rise this year, hence talk of that employment insurance scheme, which we have spoken very much at length here on this show. But then, I think when you boil it down to the youth unemployment rate, though, there are many other social economic factors and even cultural factors that play into this, though, because, for example, how many times have we heard from various companies and various corporate leaders that we speak to here on the show? Sharad, you recall we had a chat recently with one of your HR friends where, in her experience with HR, this constant disconnect between the skill levels that the young people have right now, be it their lack of communication skills or their attitudes, et cetera, versus what employers really need. So there is an element of individual responsibility that has to be shouldered on the youth, or at least potential entrance into the labor market. But nevertheless, it is a problem. MIER recognizes it. In fact, Ben Negara even wrote a box article about it in their recently released annual report.
But what about the question of foreign labor, our over-reliance? I think Julian, you just mentioned. Now, that's something clearly within our realm of control. We have enforcement issues that need. So the leakages, the undocumented workers, all about the weakness in enforcement. On the other hand, it's just a question of good policy when it comes to foreign workers.
I'm not really sure if it's within our realm of control. So of course, I think it's very easy for the government to make policies to curtail our reliance on foreign labor, and that is something I support. But in the immediate aftermath of the statement, right, what do you do? It's something that's truly structural because it's so hard to dismantle this foreign workforce just overnight.
Well, and it's a very, very complicated issue. And I remember from my discussions with officials in the Home Ministry, essentially, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on among the various stakeholders. From the government standpoint, whenever they try to implement these policies, right, be it, say, the employment mandatory commitment, setting quotas or, having a freeze on foreign worker bans, immediately you see a massive pushback from industry players, from the plantation sector, construction sector, etc.
But also there is a pushback from the rest of us, right?
Right.
When we go to a restaurant, are we prepared to bear the burden of extra cost of hiring a local?
Exactly.
We want cheap, right? We want cheap. We want a bowl of noodles for the cheap, and therefore it translates into hiring of foreign workers.
Well, okay. But I think we can't let government off the out of the dock yet.
No.
Because if you look at the debacle over the Bangladesh Malaysia MOU. We saw flip flopping. We had a minister in Dhaka, we had a minister here speaking at cross purposes. And so, again, nobody expects things to change overnight. In fact, and consultation with the employers is important. But what we see is the strength of our policy formulation mechanisms, or you know, it's just not there. We don't make policy well, and it's not seen followed through.
Sure, no, I get that point, but if we're going to go about the business of casting this net of blame, that net has to be cast wider. It is a very complex issue. You know, it's not just from the government policy and the lack of or the inconsistencies, you know, perceived. Also, on the employer standpoint, there's massive pushback. Despite efforts to try and move us up that value chain, no, they just want to settle with, you know, hiring that cheap foreign labor workforce. Now, if you do remove or place a freeze on hiring foreign laborers, question is, and this brings us back to our previous point, is the Malaysian workforce willing to then take up these jobs that are vacated by foreign laborers? No, and generally, the answer is no. So you've got this deadlock here between at least three parties, if not more. You know, and it's too easy to often cast that blame and point a finger solely at the government, whereas I contend that there are many more parties that need to shoulder this blame as well.
Well, we're going to be coming up to the news very shortly, and then, of course, the Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.